All right, tonight we're starting in on a new series. And often we engage these aspects as the aspects of shalom, shalom with Creator, shalom with creation, shalom with ourselves, and shalom with others. And I like these keywords, and it's important to come back to the keywords that we outline as distinctives as our community. I don't want to address them specifically this time within the context of shalom, as far as our relationship with God and how we interact with Him and how we position ourselves with Him or with creation or with ourselves and others. I prefer tonight to talk about it as the character of God and what He means as Creator and elements and aspects of peace and shalom and how that ordering of creation goes will come into play and will be the background of a lot of what I'm saying. But it's not specifically how we've done this before. It's a new way of thinking about this and engaging about this as we talk about the character of God and who He is as Creator. So this week, God as Creator, and then next week, Rob will be talking to us about creation, and then I'll come back and talk about ourselves and others, and that will be the beginning kickoff point in the teaching component for the connection over the next 4 weeks. So God as Creator. And this, has impact on our relationship with Him, our createdness, and it influences our lives, and in turn, it influences how we engage with creation, how we engage with others, how we view ourselves as new creation in Him. Now, talking about God as Creator, you might guess that I would say turn to page 1 in the Bible and we'll go with Genesis, but that's not what we're going to do today. If you follow the connection on social media, you will know that the tweet out today to highlight what we're going to talk about today was hashtag not as Genesis, but as Psalm 74. I don't want to talk about Genesis, but it will come up in the background as we discuss creation, the beginning of the biblical story. But creation texts come out throughout the entire Old Testament at different points, different times of wrestling with who God is and wrestling with situations, where God's action as Creator then becomes the central point as people declare His glory, declare His aspect of being the Creator, and then call on that for Him to act, for Him to engage with His creation, to engage with His people. So Psalm 74 is the scripture today, and there's two reasons for this. First is what I just outlined. This psalm makes clear the point that God acted as Creator, and He can be relied upon because of that action. The second part is because of Don't Give Your Turtle Dove Over to the Beast, and how that's a really cool song, and so I wanted another opportunity to sing it, and I knew if I picked Psalm 74, Rob would be forced to sing it after. I didn't have to twist arms at all. It's a great song. So that's a preview for response time. So those are the two reasons. So let's read Psalm 74 together. It's on page 859 in your pew Bibles. A Psalm of Asaph. O God, why have you rejected us so long? Why is your anger so intense against the sheep of your own pasture? Remember that we are the people you chose long ago, the tribe you redeemed as your own special possession. And remember Mount Zion, your home here on earth. Walk through the awful ruins of the city. See how the enemy has destroyed your sanctuary. There your enemies shouted their victorious battle cries. There they set up their battle standards. They swung their axe like woodcutters in a forest. With axes and picks, they smashed the carved paneling. They burned your sanctuary to the ground. They defiled the place that bears your name. Then they thought, let's destroy everything. So they burned down all the places where God was worshipped. We no longer see your miraculous signs. All the prophets are gone, and no one can tell us when it will end. How long, O God, will you allow our enemies to insult you? Will you let them dishonor your name forever? Why do you hold back your strong right hand, unleash your powerful fist, and destroy them? You, O God, are my king from ages past, bringing salvation to the earth. You split the sea by your strength and smashed the heads of the sea monsters. You crush the heads of the Leviathan and let the desert animals eat him. You cause the springs and streams to gush forth, and you dried up the rivers that never run dry. Both day and night belong to you, and you made the starlight and the sun. You set the boundaries of the earth, and you made both summer and winter. See how these enemies insult you, Lord. A foolish nation has dishonored your name. Don't let these wild beasts destroy your turtle doves. Don't forget your suffering people forever. Remember your covenant promises, for the land is full of darkness and violence. Don't let the downtrodden be humiliated again. Instead, let the poor and needy praise your name. Arise, O God, and defend your cause. Remember how these fools insult you all day long. Don't overlook what your enemies have said or their growing uproar. So let's spend a few minutes in Psalm 74. And you'll notice a few things. This is a psalm of lament. It's a psalm of complaint. It's a psalm of asking God to act. It's a plea in time of great trial and great distress. And it's God as creator. God is the one who creates and orders and orders things and brings out peace in that, that is at the center of this psalm. In it, there's a plea for salvation, a plea for God to act. Now, the context of this psalm, or to set the context of the psalm, we have to think about it both in its literary form and its historical form. And these are, the literary always points to historical. And you might have heard me tell this story before, but when I submitted my dissertation proposal, the biggest correction, we spent 50 minutes of an hour meeting talking about the title, because I had the historical and literary study of Habakkuk 3. And my supervisor said, you cannot talk about the historical context unless you've read the text first, but when you read the text, you can see what the context is behind it. You can see what things are pointing to, and you can kind of order it that way. So looking at Psalm 74, we see this lament, we see a complaint, we see the questions, why, how long? And the blame in this psalm is placed at God for what transpired, for not engaging, for not remembering. And that's what it pulls in here. Verse 2, remember your chosen people, the ones you redeemed. Zion, the place of revelation, the place of the glory of the Lord. Salvation, action out of chaos. And these images come out of the Exodus when God saved his people from Egypt. This pulling in Exodus imagery where God saved and redeemed his people. He entered into their place of distress, heard their cries, and delivered his people. Now verses 3 to 8, and this is why I was talking about context, describes for me the exile, and specifically the fall of Jerusalem. And perhaps you think, if you think back to the course of the last year and a half of sermons, you think I see exile in every Old Testament text. In Sunday school, they kind of make the joke that every answer to the question is Jesus, and you might think of every answer to the question of context in the Old Testament is exile, and yeah, that's probably true. Well, not every question. There's post-exilic texts. Any case, which are dealing with the effects of exile. So yeah, in the end, I wouldn't disagree with that assessment completely. Anyway, the exile was the event when there was a destruction of the land. This has happened in 586 when the fall of Jerusalem, and there was an exile about 10 years before that of the people. And to understand this, you have to understand a completely destroyed framework. Not just the destruction of the land and the temple and the sanctuary as described in verses 3 to 8, but a complete destruction of the philosophical framework of the people. Then it brings out these questions, these core worldview questions about who God is and how he interacts with his people and why didn't he act? What's wrong with a God who doesn't act in this situation? And you see throughout the text, let's talk about context, the people wrestling with this question, where was God? What's wrong? How do we deal with the situation of exile, destruction, and pain? So the effects of exile, this situation can't, in my opinion, be overstated. And Bergerman, in one of his talks, actually on Jeremiah, links the exile to like the philosophical deconstruction of 9/11 for the American people and what that meant is. And engaging in questions. And he wouldn't disagree with the statement that it's actually even bigger than that, the exile within the philosophical concept of the entire Old Testament. But we see out of tragedy and those questions of who God is and who are we with God and the wrestling with being in dark places, being in chaos, being in disorder, we see the text move into statements about God as creator, God as order, God is the one who brings peace. And in verse 12, It starts in the New Living Translation with the with you, and it actually in the Hebrew text starts with this but God. It's a key part of prayer, a key part of petition. When the text changes from complaint and from describing situations of chaos to the but God comments, because that's when they bring in this God who will act, the God who will engage his creation, the God who will no longer stay silent. It's a contrast of what's going on before. No, but God, you can engage this. You, out of this chaos, can bring order and peace. And we see throughout this text, the focus is placed on God and who he is and how he interacts with creation. In Hebrew, you don't need the word you to have a complete sentence. It's embedded within the verb. But in this passage, repeatedly and repeatedly, it's redundant pronouns. It's added there. It's put right on God's doorsteps. It's specifically addressing him. In Hebrew class, we always had to translate these sections as you yourself did this to highlight that this is that there's an extra pronoun there. And here the text is you yourself created from of old. You yourself split the seas by your strength. You yourself caused the springs and streams to gush forth. This is putting the emphasis on God, the one who orders creation, the one who created. Becomes the basis by which his action is called upon, his engagement with creation, his actions in the past. King of ancient times, the one who reigns over all creation, the one who breaks into things and creates order, bringing salvation again and again as a pattern describing his character. Before we talk about this section a little bit more, I'd like to just discuss creation stories. And the Old Testament isn't the only creation story within the whole spectrum of the ancient Near East. There are other creation stories and that are kicking around in the ancient Near East. And one of them is Enuma Elish, and that means went on high, and that's the Babylonian creation epic. That's the one that described how Marduk, the Babylonian deity, defeated the god Tiamat and then split his corpse and then used that to create the world. And it's a gruesome text compared to the calmness and the order with which God created the world as described in Genesis 1. There is no battle, there's no fighting, there's no wrestling with sea monsters. It's just he creates. But at times within the Old Testament story, we see reflections and allusions to that conversation. We see how God is then set as supreme God, the one who creates, the creator of everything. And Psalm 74 is one of the texts that retains this most strongly, this battling with sea monsters, this battling to create order. And some see it in a lot more texts. Some even see it in Habakkuk 3. There's my second reference to Habakkuk 3 tonight. But I was thinking, I haven't made a Habakkuk 3 reference in quite some time, so I think we're due. But we see here in verses 13 and 14, this describes in what Old Testament scholarship would call a chaos kampf, because biblical studies scholars need to use German words. It's still there, but to be fair, the origins of this were in German scholarship. So, but that means chaos battle. That means when the gods engage in fighting. And we see this smashing the heads of sea monsters and out of this creating some order, creating peace. Even in texts where there is no sea monsters, Leviathan isn't described, the waters are seen as things that are raging, things that are chaos and things that need to be stilled and calmed by God that are raging. We see that he is reigning, though, in this text. He is splitting the seas. He's splitting the waters. He's setting them in their place. He's creating order. And verses 16 and 17 draw it clear as this idea of the text as being a creation text, where the starlights and the suns are put into their place. And this harkens back to Genesis 1, when the starlight and the sun are used to create and to mark to mark the days and the years. And this is setting the pattern of things, as we see in this text with summer and winter in Psalm 74. God is creating order. He's creating seasons. He's creating the rhythm of life. The psalm closes and returns to God's actions in the past and calling him to remember his covenant promises, to call on him to no longer to be silent, to arise, to act, to save, to remember,
to not allow the wild beast to destroy God's turtle doves, to remember his character as creator, the one who orders creation. Out of chaos, creation. Out of chaos, peace and order. And this is what the psalmist is calling for. And this is what we call for in our lives, is there's chaos surrounding us in so many situations and so many aspects. And sometimes the chaos seems to be simply the business of the lives we lead, especially in September when everything is kicking off with extracurriculars, with school, with organizing all these things. We seem to be in a life of chaos. We just long for disorder to become order. And in these moments, we ask God to create peace for us. But also, sometimes it's as bad, at least metaphorically, within the image of destruction and desolation that we see described in Psalm 74. An event that absolutely destroys us, that causes us to wrestle with these questions of who God is, who he is as one in relationship with us, as one in relationship with him. And it's in these moments that we call on his character, the one who creates, the one who brings order, the one who brings peace. Out of that deep pain and the disorientation of chaos, he offers new life. And it's at this time that it's important to remember that he is the king of ancient times, but he's also the king who is presently reigning. As the slain lamb, as we see described in Revelation 5, he is the one who is reigning, who is still breaking in and bringing order, bringing peace. And speaking of the lamb who was slain and the idea of creation out of chaos, I'd like to read one other passage. And this idea of the raging waters and disorder and chaos and God being the one to bring peace is picked up very well by Mark 4, 35 to 41. And I'd just like to read that together. Mark is a book that's often known as having the messianic secret, where Jesus kind of does these things and people question, what's going on here? And then it's kind of this unfolding story where he's revealed as the Christ. And this is a key story within that narrative. As evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's cross to the other side of the lake." So they took Jesus in the boat and started out, leaving the crowds behind, although other boats followed. But soon a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat, and it began to fill with water. Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. The disciples woke him up, shouting, "Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown?" When Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, "Silence, be still." Suddenly the wind stopped, and there was great calm. Then he asked, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" The disciples were absolutely terrified. "Who is this man?" they asked each other. "Even the wind and the waves obey him." Now, within this story and within the idea of chaos, the only answer to the question that the disciples ask here is God. And this is one of these unfolding stories where Jesus even has powers to calm the waves, to calm the chaos, to bring out order, to bring out peace. Jesus is the calmer of the storms. God, the creator of order and peace out of chaos, is the one who breaks in and brings peace, the one who's fully revealed in Jesus Christ, the one who brings order and peace to our lives. The table is an opportunity to declare the ordering and bringing peace to our lives. Out of death, out of chaos, out of destruction, new life. Paul talks about this as proclaiming his death until he comes. It's an opportunity to proclaim out of chaos, out of the chaos of Thursday and Friday, where it seemed that all was lost, the surprising peace that Easter morning offers and brings in and initiates into our lives today. The table is an opportunity to celebrate that Jesus died and rose again, and he is making all things new, reigning as the slain lamb over all creation, breaking in, bringing order and peace to our lives in all aspects, in all areas. So I invite you to come and claim peace and order over your life today through the power of the resurrection, through the power of the reigning lamb.